Welcome. My name's Adrian Beebe, and this is the seventh in the series of podcasts about the village of Kington Langley in North Wiltshire. In this episode, we'll be talking to Tim Cousins, Chippenham-born, self-confessed amateur historian, about a notebook he found. A notebook and some other papers that were stored deep in the bowels of the Wiltshire and Swindon History Centre. Now, if the name Cousins rings a bell, that's because we spoke to Tim's father, Reuben, in episode 5. Remember this?
If you go to any village and say you've been talking to Reuben, they'll laugh red off because they know who you've been talking to.
That's Reuben in full flow. Like his father, Tim grew up in Draycott-Cern, but now lives in Kingston-on-Thames in Surrey, where he works in oil exploration. But his passion is history. He's written a book called Hand of Fate, the history of the Longs, Wellesleys and the Draycott Estate in Wiltshire. Avid listeners will know we touched on that subject in episode 5 too. But he's also researched our area widely, and back in 2018, he was wondering what information the Wiltshire and Swindon History Centre held on Kington Langley. And that's when he first encountered the notebooks of John and Marion Jeeves. What makes these notebooks so interesting? Well, John and Marion were the last people to own and run the shop in Silver Street, Kington Langley. So in this edition, we'll be talking to Tim about the contents of that notebook and what light it sheds on the village's history. You're listening to Memories of Kington Langley.
Episode 7, The Notebooks of John and Marion Jeeves.
Today, if you walk down Silver Street, after you pass the old converted chapel, you'll come to number 8, formerly number 7 before the street numbering was reordered. It stands out from among the other houses because its frontage has been extended towards the street. A nameplate declares it to be the Old Bakery. Until 1981, this was Parnell's store. And Tim Cousins is one of the few people I've spoken to who remembers the interior of the shop from his childhood in the 1970s. So what was it like?
Very old-fashioned. It's exactly as it's described in the notebooks. As you went into the door on the left-hand side, then there was a very, very long, high serving bar, like a bar in a pub with dark wood on the top of it. And behind that, as you would expect, was a whole bunch of sweet jars. So that was what interested us. Very old fashioned, just shelves that you just asked Mrs. Jeeves to weigh up for you of whatever you wanted. It wasn't anything like a self-service place, and quite a small serving area. I don't know how many feet, 10 feet long, something like that, for the front. You can still see the where the serving area was in the front of the building as it now sits. Had a big glass window in front of it with various posters all over it.
What Tim, or probably any of the villagers, didn't know was that the shop's owners, John and Marion Jeeves, were writing down many of their experiences in the village and recording local stories and anecdotes they heard in a series of notebooks and scraps of paper. This is how their main notebook begins.
Keith Bodman had taken over the shop from the Parnell family, who had run the business for 3 generations, Arthur, Giles, and finally Lionel. I have been told that, in the beginning, They ran the business from the premises now occupied by the Hit or Miss pub, 50 yards up the road, as the pub was in the big house next door at the time. Then, the Silver Street property, now number 7, was bought in 1866, and the business operated from there. It was village grocers, a bakery baking bread in the outbuildings, and a butcher of pigs.
More on the butchering of pigs later. The fact that this notebook still exists after 40 years is interesting enough. The fact that Tim Cousins found it and was able to photograph and transcribe its contents is even more astounding. How did he discover it? Just a couple of words of warning before we begin. First, Tim and I spoke over the web, so there's the odd bit of distortion. And secondly, I mistakenly call the Jeeves the Greaves a few times. It is Jeeves. Back to Tim and how he found the notebook.
So I did a search for Kington Langley Fitzurse in the index using the National Archives website, and then cross-referencing against what was available in the Wiltshire and Swindon History Centre. That came up with those documents. There was a very, very large set that relates to the Coleman family, and then there was a whole bunch of other documents which were fairly random, which would just come up with Kington Langley in the title. So that's how they were found. Knowing that various projects that had happened in the past with research interviews, I thought it would be good to extend that from sort of living memory notes in these documents. That's not something that the Victoria County history deal with, although that's changing somewhat. But to get the local memories written down and then put out into the public domain, I thought was interesting.
So at some point, someone took it upon themselves to give the notebook to the local history archive. Whether that was John and Marion, or perhaps their children, we don't know. Tim mentioned the Victoria County history there. It's the reason behind this research, but what is it? I asked him.
I'm not a professional historian. The Victoria County history is run and is researched by professional historians. So it's a project that's been going, as the name suggests, since the late 19th century. And it's to put a framework in place for village histories in a structured manner of various details of the descent of the manors back to Saxon times through Domesday, and then the structure of ownership of the various parts of the villages within it, the history of the church, the history of nonconformity, trade and industry within a village, some various place names and highlights of important buildings and structures and ancient monuments that occur within those villages. My involvement was just because for Kington Langley, which is on the Victoria County History Project for Volume 20, which they're actively researching now, a quarter of the village was owned by the Draycott estate. So there was research that I was doing anyway for that part of the estate within the parish of Kington Langley, and I just offered to hand over my research notes to the Victoria County History. I'm pleased to say that they have just very tentatively identified somebody to carry on the research for Kington St Michael and Kington Langley.
And when the project is completed, Tim, whenever that's going to be, how will people be able to get hold of this information? Where will they be able to read this history?
The VCH always publishes the big red volumes, as they're called. And Wiltshire is one of the counties which has got one of the most complete sets. So that's very, very good. They will be available when they're published in the History Centre in Chippenham and in the local history section of Chippenham Library, as they always are. And then after a period, after publication of the hard copy, they're always put online. So there's a British History Online website, and if you just search for that, you'll find the parish histories published there.
Incidentally, Tim says his interest in history was inspired by his old head teacher at Langley Fitzurse School, Mr. Cusack. You may well have seen some of Mr. Cusack's drawings of Kington Langley buildings in the Village magazine or Sheila Calhoun's book. Back to Tim.
Am I right that your next step was to go to the History Centre itself to get these documents out of their archive and then to photograph?
Yep. So in all of the work that I've been doing on Kington Langley, I go to the History Centre and just take a whole bunch of digital photos. And that involved taking photos of these particular notebooks and then transcribing them. The handwriting obviously is much easier than it usually is when I'm doing a survey from the 1650s from the manorial documents. But nevertheless, it's just good to have that typescript up into the same format as all of the other research documents. Then it was just a case of checking some of the details, that there were notes in there which I wanted to follow up as they were of particular interest.
So as I understand, the main notebook, we're looking at a primary school notebook with wallpaper covers. You don't remember what kind of wallpaper it was, do you?
No, they were just how I remember notebooks from the 1970s and early 1980s. It's how we would do exercise books at Harden Hewish School in the first year.
Could you describe, just in general terms, what you found in this main notebook?
That they're a completely random set of memories just jotted down over a period of time as they occurred to Marion Greaves and her husband. They dot around by time, by place, by subject, that there'll be some information about old memories, and then it'll go back to discussing what's happening in the shop from you know, a couple of years ago, or from when they took over the shop in the 1960s, and the renovation work that they did and what they'd found in the house in Silver Street. And then it'll go back to another jottings down of people from the village who'd remembered something. So it's an interesting and unstructured document that needs to be looked at and put into some sort of order.
An interesting and unstructured document. A random set of memories. What better moment then to give you an example of what's in the notebook? Here are the Jeeveses writing about the shop's former owner, Lionel Parnell.
Mr. Parnell, Lionel, always killed pigs on the grass verge opposite the shop. This is long before the council houses were built. In the Second World War, I believe an inspector was horrified to see it, so Lionel was made to build a shed out the back, boarded, covered with black galvanised sheets, a drain in the floor, a beam to take chains for the corpses, and a hatch in the far wall to make a through draught. The ministry was satisfied. However, Mr. Parnell continued to kill pigs on the grass verge. Lionel Parnell had the first car in the village, and it was kept in the black shed at the front of the shop. When we came, the shed was fitted out with shelves to store groceries. He chose Kington Langley 246 for his phone number.
Interestingly, there's a footnote to suggest that the villagers didn't think much of Lionel's bacon. So what do we know about the notebook's authors, John and Marion Jeeves?
They took over the shop in 1968. I actually think I only went into them after school once. I can only remember ever going into the shop on one occasion. They closed it in 1981. It was very popular in its time in that part of the village in Silver Street. It relied quite heavily, I think, on having more people in the village during the daytime and a larger school as it then was. And with Dovey's Terrace just very close by, they were on the route home from school, so they did well out of that. Other than that, we know very little about either the Parnells who had founded the shop or the Greaves themselves. John seems to have had quite an interest in archaeology. There's quite professional notes with grid references to maps about Roman finds that he'd found around, and he'd given some artifacts that he'd found to the Wiltshire History Museum, and that was one of the checks that I made. So they were noted with an accession date with John Greaves' name and from Kington Langley.
One thing we do know for certain about John and Marion from their notes is that they regularly spoke to elderly villager Percy Bird, who, once upon a time, had helped Lionel Parnell with his baking. The Birds are, of course, a well-known local family. Percy was the uncle of Don Elms and was once the owner of one of the Dovey's cottages, where Don still lives, and number 3 Silver Street. According to the Jeeveses, Percy was full of stories, like this one.
Percy is still sure the right name for Silver Street is White Stocks Lane. He thinks it was called Silver Street because the weavers who used to live there in the cottages next to the shop numbers 5 and 6, were paid in silver by Simon Salter. Percy was told this by Ernie Honeybone. Someone else said it was a joke, as it was so muddy and someone went to church one day in white stockings that were anything but. In 1968, it was rubble all the way and was only tarmacked when the old people's bungalows were built.
What did Tim think of this story?
And indeed, the notes point out that Silver Street perhaps wasn't that street's original name.
No, there's various names. Something Whites, hold on, I'll just refer to my notes.
White Stocks Lane, they talk about. White Stocks Lane.
White Stocks Lake, that's it. Yeah, I have never heard of White Stocks name. I know that various names of lanes did change. For example, Days Lane is named after a farmer who lived at Whitelands. So it only existed for that period when that farmer owned Whitelands Farm. What it had been called before that, I've got no idea. I don't know for what period it had been called that before Silver Street, but it's more interested to me how it came to be known as Silver Street, because that was something to do with the fact that they were getting silver from Isaac Salter, who was running a clothing factory at Great House, or at least that was the rumour. So obviously he was paying his staff very well, which fits in with some research that I've been doing recently on exactly how much the Salters made out of that. They did extremely well and left a will in the 1830s for several thousand pounds, by which time they'd moved to Malmesbury and were living in a very large mansion in Burton Hill House, where the school is now.
But this next reading has to be my favourite of all Percy Bird stories in the notebook.
Percy said that in days gone by, the young rightful heir to the throne of England was done away with so that a relative's child could be king instead. Legend has it that the child was buried in Wiltshire. Percy's mother was certain it was between Kington Langley and Draycott in a golden coffin. Where's my metal detector?
Tim knows much more about local history than me, so I'm keen to hear his view on this one.
Now, the notebooks continue to tell us about the very colourful Percy Bird, who I will do a little bit of digging about. I'll have a chat to the Elmses about that one. There's a particular story that caught my attention, which I wondered if you've ever heard before, which is Percy's tale of his mother's story of the rightful heir to the throne in England being done away with. And legend have it saying that child was buried in Wiltshire. And Percy's mother, it was certainly between Kington Langley and Draycott Cern in a golden coffin. Have you ever come across that story anywhere else?
I have never come across that story until I read that in the notebook. I knew Percy Bird in the late 1970s, and he could tell a good story. I have grave doubts about the authenticity of this story. Going back to the Victoria County history, we were going through various parts of the Saxon history of Bremhill. And the minute you get a king, king's ton, that owned of a manor, there could be something that has been followed up from that and then by Chinese whispers has transmuted itself into this story about the golden coffin. If I was to guess, I would say it was Percy Bird's mother wanted him to do some digging in the garden and had put this idea in his head to encourage him to do the digging. And there's no more truth in it than that. But hey, you know, you only need a metal detector these days.
Perhaps I'll invest in that metal detector after all. Another section of the notebook that caught my attention was about a number of houses that used to exist just off Watling Street. Now, prior to lockdown, I'd never heard of Watling Street, but having spent some time with an OS map walking around some of the old tracks of the village, I discovered that Watling Street is the bridle way that runs from the Langley Road eastwards. It begins just south of the village, not far from Pineapple Fitness, and it leads towards Sydney's Wood and Sutton Lane. When I walked it, I came across an old ruined property covered in weeds. This is how the notebook tells it.
Mrs. Ted Bryant, née Dora Nell, who had been in service at Great House when it was privately owned by the Garnetts, lived in cottages on Lower Common. We had asked her previously about the ruined cottages in the wood at Langley Burrell. On the 10th of October 1978, she brought us a letter she had received. She must have asked the writer if she could remember the cottage. Extract from letter from Barbara Poole's Finkley House, Finkley Andover. I was interested to hear about the old times, even though sad. The last time I went through Sydney's wood was soonish after the war, I think. It was getting overgrown. Reynolds Cottage was still there, but unoccupied. We seem to be living in a different era now. When I went there, both Mr. and Mrs. Reynolds were pretty well stone deaf, and there was a bedridden old lady in the adjoining cottage. The door was open, so I walked in and eventually found her upstairs in her bed. She was thin as a rake, and her chief worry was that she couldn't get any coal. We told Mrs. Miles, who I think had the shooting, and she contacted her son. At one time, the shooting was let out to the Garnets. Mr. Reynolds used to walk over to see to his business, and also would walk over to Watling Street to catch the bus to Chippenham. The two cottages were very nicely kept, with a veranda round and garden full of flowers. No wooded undergrowth then. When shoots were held, the gentlemen used to go into the house and eat, while the beaters retired to a tin shed in the garden. This recently collapsed in 1976. We have found some nice old bottles here. In front of the cottage to the south is a good deal of Roman pottery from the 1st to 4th centuries.
What's Tim's reaction to this story?
That's interesting because that's a very, very normal thing in all of the villages of North Wiltshire. We forget that there were many, many more outlying cottages. They were the same in Draycott. They were the same in Seagree and all parishes of North Wiltshire. There were two distinct parts to that. One was a keeper's cottage that was near Sydney's Wood. That was part of the Coleman estate owned by the manor and was probably run by the gamekeeper. There's notes in the notebooks about shoots being organised by the Colemans, and then they would come and have refreshments in that cottage before going back to the manor. And that was very normal. There was shooting lodges and huts and various other farm buildings dotted around all of the great estates of North Wiltshire for exactly the same purpose. The other two were just normal cottages. They were agricultural and they were just on the right hand side going down Watling Street. So if you're following that public footpath, they were turned into barns in the early part of the 20th century and had been used by the Bird family for building stores. So they were builders. They'd converted the barns into stores. And then as smaller agricultural buildings didn't need to be kept anymore, they were demolished probably in the late 60s.
Another extract that intrigues me is about a long-forgotten mill that once stood just outside the village off Days Lane. It was called Bide Mill. Here's what the notebook says.
Mr. Ernie Honeybone, in his 80s in the 1970s, from another local family, lived in a villa in Ashes Lane with a brother or two and a sister. He knew about Bide Mill, but even in his childhood there were no walls to be seen and the site had disappeared from view. No one had ever told him exactly where it stood. The leats are still very visible. He did not know of the lane from Clanville past the back of Whiteland's farm. Carts used to go down Draycott land and round the corner to get to the mill and follow the parish boundary to Clanville. Behind the farm, the lane had been ploughed up into the fields.
That all sounds a bit confusing, but Tim explains it for me.
Bide Mill, if you go down Days Lane, if you go down Bowl Down Hill, if you don't go into the bridle path, which would be a right-hand turn, if you keep going down until you're at the lowest part, you're on a bridge on the little stream there. You're about a third of the way before you get to Southsea Farm, in a little valley there. And Bide Mill was a grist mill for corn just in the field. There's a little bridge with a track that goes to Southsea Farm that links part of the Draycott estate, those two fields, and there's a public footpath which goes along the northern boundary of the stream there. And that little gateway has got some staddle stones about 4 foot high, I would think, big limestone blocks of stones holding up the and underpinning that bridge. And that's all that's left of the Leat stream. So that stream goes all year, but it's a very, very small one. And it was just enough to run a local grist mill for grinding corn. There's an in the notes in the notes that the Jeeves put together, it's quite correct. You would come on a little trackway that you can still see that goes due north down the hill towards the stream from the bridle path. You would be looking out over South Sea Farm at that point, and you can still see that old T-junction that went down. It was put out of use in the early part of the 20th century, late part of the 19th century. We don't know the exact date. There's all sorts of deeds to the mill in the Coleman part of the documents in the Wiltshire and History Centre. We know who the millers were throughout time in the 1650s through to the 1740s. And then it had been put out of use by the much larger mill, which was in Mill Hill, as the name would suggest, which is further downstream within the woods by Draycote House. And then even that one had been closed down by 1881. And all the milling on the Draycote estate after that had concentrated at Kellaway's, which was on the River Avon itself, a much, much bigger milling operation there that went right the way through from normal agricultural work for the farms through to flour milling.
Perhaps the most poignant section of the notebook isn't anything to do with the old history of the village. It's Marion Jeeves herself writing about the decline of their shop and its eventual closure. During the 13 years in which they ran the business, the tide of economics and social change turned against them. The shop that had existed for over 100 years in Silver Street, meeting the needs of generations of Kington Langley villagers, found itself on the wrong side of history. This is Marion Jeeves writing at the end of her notebook.
Before we came to the shop, Westinghouse paid a food Christmas bonus, which usually found its way to the shop's till. By the time we came, though, that had stopped. Things generally began to get tight, and where we had previously sold sets of frilly ladies' undies, as well as groceries and bagged up coal, paper goods, and a certain amount of ironmongery, we found their money wouldn't stretch to extras, where the good profit was. Then Sainsbury's opened, and that was that. Although not cheap, they sell good quality stuff, a good range. Also, the clientele had changed. When we came, our customers were mainly old people, or women with young families. As years went by, the old ones went to Chippenham to live, or died, and the young ones went out to work, usually in Chippenham. And there was very little moving going on to change the customers, so the customers went shopping in Chippenham and only used us for things they had forgotten. You can't survive like that. All the posh folk with cars shopped elsewhere anyway, but thought it was cute to buy fresh eggs and a brown loaf at the village shop, which they would invariably order and then forget to collect. A day-old brown loaf isn't very appetising for us to finish up. I was heartily relieved when we closed, although appalled to stop such a long-lived institution. Our customers were very upset, but not the parson, the headmaster, members of the parish council. Nobody bothered to put a note in the local paper saying we had closed. Much less that they regretted our passing and thanked us for our service in the past. That just about summed it up for me. We had tried to sell as a going concern, but couldn't find a buyer. Sick transit Gloria Mundi. The water closed over us and that was that. It was very sad to see all the village things failing. The chapel next door has very few worshippers. The other shop in the village, the post office, is appealing for people to use the shop or it will close too.
Tim was living locally when the shop closed. What are his thoughts on its loss to the village?
At the end of the notes, Mrs. Jeeves talks about the decline of the shop. She points the finger of blame fairly squarely at Sainsbury's opening Chippenham. Do you remember, were you around when that happened?
Yeah, so we're talking about the old Sainsbury's there, the one that was by the river on the Borough Parade site. I can't remember the exact year. Very late 1970s, something like that. I mean, that was very, very normal for that to be a threat to the local villages. But there were all sorts of other reasons. Even in the early 1980s, people weren't working as much in villages as they had. They were all working in Chippenham by that stage. Farmers didn't need as many people working on their farms within the village. So it was a very, very normal thing for there to be pressure on local resources, as there are now with pubs and some of the closures that are happening with those in smaller country villages in North Wiltshire. It's interesting, they seem to have run it at a loss for as long as they could. They held out as long as they possibly could. It was good of them because they do note some of the sort of community-spirited things that they'd done for the village, tried to do with various contacting people because they had a car and they had a phone, which was needed in the 1960s before everybody had them. Yes, it was sad, but I guess that's the way things went.
As for John and Mary themselves, Don Elms told me that they moved to Cheryl when the shop closed. Having read Tim's transcripts of the notebooks, the thing that strikes me most is the sheer variety of the entries. They're like a collage of village life 40 or 50 years ago. A story here, a memory there, a quick pen portrait of a person. And perhaps that's what history's really like. Not the regimented, orderly accounts from the hardback textbooks we remember so well from school, but something altogether more impressionistic, something more stream of consciousness. Indeed, reading the notes, one can feel the Jeeves' satisfaction as they capture a particularly vivid anecdote. John and Marion's notebooks are now back in the vaults of the Wiltshire and Swindon History Centre, ready for the next curious person who wants to find out more about the village and its history. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. This has been Memories of Kington Langley. Goodbye.